Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
We're back on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by GoPSURV.com. Best single game RV value in Happy Valley. Check them out at GoPSURV.com. All kinds of cool stuff and good reasons to come for the last weekend of the home season. I will be there for Penn State, Maryland, so you can come check me out at the GoPSURV.com lot. Greg, we were – Dustin Hawk has been here, by the way. That's Greg Pickle. I guess I should mention that.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
We talked Penn State Rutgers. We did not afford ourselves the time to address this rumor that's going around.
Too much basically to talk mentioning, about Penn State Rutgers.
Yeah, way too much. Too many really prime storylines in that 20-7 win for Penn State. There's a little substance, but I would still call it a rumor of USC potentially being interested in James Franklin, with the caveat here, the disclaimer being USC still has a coach as of right now. But they're what, 5-6?
Yes.
And they're playing Notre Dame the last weekend of the season. Probably going to be 5-7. Probably not going to a ball game. Clay Helton was not high on Lynn Swann, their athletic director's list anyway. He inherited him.
Right.
James Franklin would seem to fit that Southern California vibe, would get facilities. He would have a prime recruiting territory. It's not ridiculous. What's your take?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, James Franklin's always been, for the most part, an East Coast guy. I do believe him, and I think it's genuine when he says that Penn State's the place he wants to be. Why is his name being thrown around by guys like Bruce Feldman and Pete Thamel, who are really plugged in, not just to the college football world, not just to USC, but also to James Franklin and the Penn State program? I think that's the question you have to ask yourself. That's what makes it... You know, a lot of these you can just dismiss out of hand and say, nah, that's ridiculous. And I kind of – there is a part of me that says this one is a little bit ridiculous too. On the other hand, there's a lot of well-connected people, again, both on the USC side of this and the Penn State side of this, that are tossing James Franklin's name around. Now, there's just smoke there at the time being. Clay Helton is still USC's head coach, as you said. But it's something to just wonder about. I don't think there will be anything to it when all is said and done. I do think Clay Helton will be let go. I do not think James Franklin is USC's next head coach. But, you know, in this day and age, you just never know. But I don't see – I think he's put too much heart and blood, sweat, and tears into this Penn State program to jump ship at this point.
Yeah, and I think anytime you have a guy who can recruit and has a history of winning and who has a personality that would fit, that would, you know, wouldn't shy away from that type of spotlight, it makes sense to link it up. Mike Gross from Lancaster Online had a good column that kind of put all this stuff into perspective and, you know, reinforced the idea that if this rumor is out there, somebody wants it to be out there, and you can probably link it back to James Franklin's agent just to gear up for negotiation season, whether he wants more money for facilities or he wants more money for his assistant coach pool, whatever the case might be. I'm not taking it very seriously, but as you mentioned, to have those kind of titans in the college football reporting industry feeding into that, that's what makes this a little bit different than some of the other nonsense that you might see right out there. With that in mind, let's talk about the Big Ten. You know, one of the storylines, you know, circles directly back to Penn State and Maryland, the way they played against Ohio State, or, you know, maybe how Ohio State played in beating Maryland 52-51 in overtime. This was not the first time. I mean, how many games has Ohio State been in? Probably three or four that they ended up winning that they were on the ropes and teams just haven't been able to put them away. Like Minnesota led them in halftime. Penn State led them in the fourth quarter. Maryland was kind of in the driver's seat for a lot of this game, and then they end up flailing around and going for two instead of kicking to tie in overtime, and they lose 52-51. Do you agree with the idea in that situation of going for two?
I hate it. I'm tired of it. Honestly, it's this new trend in college football where
the Carolina Panthers did it this weekend too.
Yeah, we'll talk about that one later. That was a personal interest of me.
Oh, good.
You know, the Hollywood,
Greg's
the Hollywood,
best bets.
Yeah, the Hollywood sportsbook opened, and I made a small donation. So that was particularly painful. I did not need that brought back up today. But no, it's what I just it, that play doesn't really have anything to do with my opinion. I didn't like when Maryland did it. I don't like when most teams do this. I mean, look, if you're Maryland, you're scoring right along with them. And to me, the whole idea is don't chase points until you have to, which is would be the point where they force you to go for two. And, you know, a couple of things on that. Number one, Maryland was gashing them, just gashing them over and over. So if you're going to go for two and put the game on the line, why wouldn't you run? Now, I understand the guy was probably open, but that goes back to point number two, which is that, look, these guys run these two. They don't run these 2-point conversion plays often. They don't practice them that often. Why? Because there's a pretty good chance you're never going to use them in a game, or if you do, it's going to be in a do or die situation, and there's not too many of those. So they don't practice those that often. So you break out a play that you don't practice that much in a situation that, yeah, obviously you're not accustomed to double or triple overtime, whatever it was at that point. I guess it was double overtime at that point. And I don't know. I just excuse me. I just think that at some point, you know, everyone gets a little bit too cute. This whole idea of let's go for two and win the game on our terms. I guess maybe statistically you can make an argument, especially at the NFL level, where, you know, Mike Tomlin and the Steelers have sort of been on the front end of this, you know, shifting to 2-point plays as opposed to dealing with the 33-yard extra point. And I can understand it maybe at that level, but at this rate, I just don't see it. You know, I just don't see why it would make sense to do it in college. I guess, you know, they were an underdog. They were at home. They wanted to try and win. That's fine. But I just, you know, if it works out, obviously the tone is much different, but I still don't think I'd agree with it.
There's a couple things. So if you're the team that came storming back to tie the game and force overtime, I am for kicking it in that situation. If you're the team that had to hang on for dear life late and you're feeling grateful for reaching overtime in the first place, I think you get more into the realm of justifying that kind of aggressive move. If you're a team that's been through what Maryland has been through this season, they've come out the other side. They've been, frankly, more competitive given all the issues, including stuff on the field and off the field. Then, you know, you play like you don't have much to lose. But my issue with it is, as you mentioned, Maryland was still churning out yards. And this was a game where I get the temptation. You're 3 yards away from a win. You're 3 yards away from a win. All these analytics out there suggest more and more going for it on fourth down. I think you can probably lump 2-point conversions under that umbrella. I get it. I felt like I would have won if that's my team. I felt like I would have wanted them to kick it and to keep living to fight another play. But you know, Maryland is 5-6 now. That was the difference between securing surefire bowl eligibility and not. And now they go on the road and they're an underdog to Penn State with a 5-6 record. So I give a lot of credit to Maryland, and one of the side conversations with this, with Penn State playing them next, is how realistic was what they managed to do now, and with Anthony McFarland going over 200 yards in back-to-back weeks, he is a big-time threat, and he's a guy that Penn State, he committed to Michigan, I think.
That sounds right, yes.
And then decommitted, and Penn State was one of the teams that was on him, didn't end up getting him, so they should good be player. Familiar with him. Yeah. Really good player. And, yeah. You know, with Penn State, it's another one of these offenses where you gotta bat down the hatches and you gotta gear up against the run without having to pay too much respect for the pass.
Yeah, so the question I have at this point, Dustin, is Maryland able to get over that crushing loss to Ohio State where you almost upset a top team in the country at home, and now you have to go on the road to Penn State? You have to put that game behind you. You have to get over the emotions. I mean, it screams of a letdown spot for the Terps. It really does. But the balancing factor here is that, number one, a lot of these kids know a lot of the kids on Penn State's roster. Some of them undoubtedly feel like Penn State should have recruited them, should have offered them, and so I think that plays a role as well. So it's going to be interesting for sure to see how this all plays out. You know, I think that, you know, Penn State obviously did go after some of these kids, didn't get them. A lot of these kids they did not offer. So, you know, we'll see. But, you know, Maryland's going to have to balance the emotion of coming up for a big game versus obviously the letdown and the crushing nature in which they lost, you know, last week to Ohio State. So we'll see. We'll get into that on Wednesday's show, I guess. But I do think that, you know, Matt Canada has done a really nice job down there, and he certainly has put himself in contention to keep that job, even though he still isn't on most of the hot list, like the coaching boards that are put out there. They don't include Matt Canada. I'm really not sure that
for
could
the
be
Maryland
possible.
Job,
yeah, yeah,
or for just, any job, but for the Maryland job too,
doesn't really make much sense.
The other side of this is Ohio State and the struggles of their defense and the
struggles of Urban Meyer.
Yeah, Urban Meyer just in agony. I don't know whether that's physical or mental or emotional or a combination of the factors. It's a weird time for Ohio State because they're still 10-1. They still have a lot of control over what happens to them. But this was not very encouraging to give up 298 and two touchdowns to Anthony McFarland. Looking around the rest of the Big Ten, Northwestern already clinched the Big Ten West. They beat Minnesota 24-14. A lot of pictures and video before the game of all those guys with their shirts off, including offensive coordinator Mick McCall, who is, I don't know, in his 60s.
Yeah.
Fun scene. It was around 22 degrees at game time. Not a lot special. It was a very Northwestern kind of win. They forced three turnovers. Now I think 13-1 in their last 14 Big Ten games, yeah. Or 12-1 in the last 13. Impressive, I guess. I'm never really that impressed by anything Northwestern does, though. I have to apologize
for that. Firmly established.
Yeah. Nebraska, 9-6 over Michigan State. You want to talk about unwatchability of Penn State's win over Rutgers. How about that one? Just five field goals between them. Nebraska kicked three field goals in the fourth quarter. They were down 6-0 then. They're now 4-1 in their last five games after getting off to an 0-6 start. Another struggle offensively for Michigan State. You give credit to Nebraska, obviously, but Rocky Lombardi, 15 out of 41 for 146 yards. Just a brutal performance. They haven't scored 30 points in their last seven straight games. That's something I want to watch, even spilling into next season. Can Michigan State score points moving forward? Michigan, 31-20 over Indiana. It was a survive and advance type weekend for the Wolverines. They trailed 17-15 at the half. They kicked six field goals in this one.
Would have been impressive.
That would have been very impressive. That would have been 48 points just all for Jake Moody. They gave up 139 yards on the ground, clearly looking ahead to Ohio State to round out the year. Wisconsin beats Purdue in overtime. Iowa blows out Illinois, and obviously the big question, you got about 30 seconds, can Ohio State run with Michigan? It's the story of the Big Ten season coming up this weekend.
No. I mean, that defense is just brutal.
Just say no for 30 straight seconds.
No. That defense is just brutal right now. It would take a significant turnaround in 6 days for that Ohio State program to beat Michigan. If Michigan can't beat Ohio State this year, when is it ever going to beat Ohio State?
And an underrated component of that is Michigan might have a chance to really gash them offensively. Given what their strengths are, given what Ohio State's weaknesses have proven to be, including this past weekend when they gave up 300-plus rushing yards to Maryland. It'll be a fun one. Michigan goes in as a favorite on the road at Ohio State to determine the Big Ten's college football fate. One more segment to go here on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Ask Greg. Come up after this. Hey, Penn State fans, here is your chance to take something off your bucket list. That's right. GoPSU RV is offering a full range of RV setups ready for a weekend of great tailgating at their Lions Den, which is the closest single-game RV overnight lot to Beaver Stadium. You can arrive anytime Friday afternoon. Stay until Sunday morning, avoiding all that traffic. Don't miss this unique opportunity. Go online to GoPSURV.com and reserve your RV today.
Life gets complicated, and it only gets more complicated when things change, which is why AAA insurance agents take the time to talk with you so that they can help you choose the best auto and home coverage. Don't put off getting protected. Let AAA help cover what you care about. Insurance that's not just insurance. Talk to your local AAA insurance agent or visit AAA.com to learn more about AAA.
409 Tailgate Club proudly introduces our tailgate wines. Like our great sauces and rubs, you'll enjoy our wines at your next cookout, tailgate, or even as a great gift for that fan of the blue and white. Speaking of blue and white, you've got to try our award-winning Sapphire Blue, made from pure blueberry juice. Or how about our Old Main Pinot Grigio and 1855 Vidal? Go to tailgatewine.com and find all our PA preferred wines. That's tailgatewine.com.